insulin actually is spoken in the same breath as glucose. Insulin is a hormone which is secreted by pancreas. And our pancreas is the main gland which actually controls as far as the energy metabolism is concerned. It has two main parts, what we call as the exocrine and the endocrine. Exocrine part is what secretes enzymes, and these enzymes help us to digest foods. And one of them being the carbohydrate part of it, which is broken down to glucose by these enzymes.
Hello everyone, this is Vikas and you are listening to Run with Fitpage. Today is episode number 133, and today in our conversation we are discussing all about diabetes. This is a condition that is possibly most searched online when it comes to health conditions in India, isn't it? And we are seeing increasingly there is a rise in lifestyle-led diseases, and diabetes is leading from the front, unfortunately. The conversation today becomes also more important because while we are runners, we are not necessarily very aware of various health conditions. We try to make sense of information that's given to us, available to us with the help of our doctors, through medical tests, etc. But more often than not, we don't know a lot about it. And that is why in the last few episodes and in the subsequent episodes, we are going to cover a number of health conditions and how these impact we as normal human beings more than we as runners. While these are important for us to keep in mind as runners as well, but first it's important for us to have longevity, for us to be healthy, and for us to be able to live in a way that we want to be so that we can perform better. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Brigadier J. Muthukrishnan, Sena Medal and Vishisht Seva Medal. He is a professor and head of department of internal medicine at Armed Forces Medical College in Pune. And if you are a runner for a long period of time, you would have heard of him for sure. Not only he is a great runner, but he is a full-time medical professional. He's an enthusiast who loves to help. And you will see from the conversation that he has a sea of information. And today, we are just covering a tip of it. In the conversation today, we will start by demystifying, or rather defining, some of the key terms when it comes to diabetes. We will talk about how the situation occurs, what can you do to prevent for a long period of time, and if in case you are suffering with pre-diabetic or diabetic condition, how do you go about remissing it? How do you go about managing it? In addition, we will talk about CGMs. We will talk about CGM and its role for performance and how you can make sense of your glucose levels to fuel optimally and run better and, of course, faster. Let's welcome Dr. J. Muthukrishnan to the show and learn all about diabetes today. Dr. Muthukrishnan, welcome to Run With Fitpage. It's an absolute pleasure to have you with us. As we were discussing backstage, we have known of each other for a while now, but it's possibly the first time we are formally connecting to discuss a topic that you are an expert in, and I'm an enthusiast to keen to learn and understand more. And we both being runners have love of running as well as trying to help runners address some of their issues. And I thought in today's conversation, we'll try to unravel some of those points. And as I was discussing that metabolic health, various other health conditions have been of prime importance. Post-COVID, a number of contraindications and issues have come by as well. And I thought one of the topics that is possibly getting drawn as a common thread is diabetes, which we will, which I wanted to seek your help in talking about through this conversation today. But before we get to all of that, how about we start with your introduction of your academic background and how it started for you, and then how did you get into armed forces?
Yeah, thank you very much. And I must thank you and your team for inviting me to this. I love talking about running. I love talking about my own specialty, which is endocrinology and deals with these metabolic issues. I'm a graduate of the Armed Forces Medical College, which is in Pune. This is a college which brings out graduates who do MBBS and thereafter join the forces. So I passed out of this college after doing MBBS in 1992 and thereafter joined the army. And over the years, I have qualified in medicine after having done MD and thereafter super specialized in endocrinology in 2009. And since then, I've been generally moving around the country. That's how what army does to you. You need to sort of move out after every 3 to 4 years. So after I finished endocrine specialty, this was in 2009, I was in Chandigarh. And that's where running happened to me. I was 40-year-old back then. And the reason why I started running is, it's still an enigma. Just that in army, fitness has to come naturally, but 5 kilometers was all I needed to run for that. But marathons and subsequently half marathons and half marathons happened then. I can blame my brother, who's Vishwanathan. A lot of people know him. He's an ultra runner, who's a barefoot and Gandhian. And he sort of happened to be a role model I wanted to follow right from childhood. So running happened thereafter. So last about 12, 13 years, I've been running. I have run across the country, most of the events and a few abroad. Currently, I am in Pune for the last year or so. Prior to that, I was in Delhi and before that in Pune again for 4 years.
Great. You have come to become a very good runner as well over the last decade or so. We have seen and followed your running journey. And when we were looking at your bio data, it just seemed quite picture perfect that a doctor, an armed forces official, and a runner, and the topic that we want to discuss today, all of these just comes together fairly quickly. I thought through this conversation, we'll try to demystify some of the points. On one side, we see runners run after carbohydrate first as an energy source, fuel source for their racing, and on the other hand, you will see we are being asked to reduce carbohydrate intake for losing weight and fat and things like those. And we also see another set of people where we find that glucose is not something that that's very preferred by them for number of health conditions, etc. And loosely talked about as sugar, etc. And people confuse many things, which we will talk about. How about we take from the very base and start right from the glucose level itself? What exactly is glucose, and what is its role in the blood as well as in the body? And the premise for asking this question is that I wanted to build the narrative and take it together towards diabetes is where I want to take it.
Yeah, so glucose is the simplest form of sugar or carbohydrates in a larger scheme of things. This is what, if you say carbohydrate, it means a lot of other things, which may be sugar, starches, which are more complex forms. And when we eat any form of carbohydrate, it eventually gets broken down in the body to glucose, which is the simplest form and can be absorbed through the membranes into the cells. And it forms the basic fuel for our body, other than, of course, fat and protein, which also can be broken down to produce energy. But then glucose is the most efficient source of energy. So the body tends to sort of, it's partial towards burning glucose first as a source of energy. For us as runners, it's obviously important because we need something which is very efficient and can quickly produce energy. But over the last few decades, we've understood that as Asians, as especially South Asians, we are at a greater risk for diabetes. Now, that's what has actually put this molecule of glucose into disrepute, so to say. Normally, in the body, glucose levels are always required to some extent because our cells, our the organs have to function and need energy for that, even while we are sleeping and or resting. Now, for that, you need a basal level of blood glucose, which generally is around 100 and 100 milligrams per deciliter or below. And after, when you eat something, these levels would go up. And the body has hormones like insulin, which ensure that these levels get controlled, because insulin is what ensures that the glucose can enter the cells and be utilized by the cells for energy. Over the years, we've also understood that any level of glucose which is beyond this normal is producing some kind of a toxicity to these cells. And the most important cells which get affected are the cells of blood vessels, which can be in the heart, it can be in the eyes, it can be in the kidney, nerves, almost everywhere. So higher the glucose levels, the bad it is. So diabetes became a disease of high glucose levels, and levels which would cause toxicity to these tissues and cause some long-term complications. And hence the levels beyond a certain level were labeled as diabetes. So currently, if you just ask me, the as per the current standing criteria, which has over the years actually come down, a fasting level below 100 is normal. Fasting means you've not eaten anything for 12 hours overnight. And after having eaten, 12 hours later, it should be below 140 milligrams per deciliter. That's what a normal person should have. And anybody having a fasting above 100, up to 125 is called a pre-diabetes, and more than 126 is called diabetes. Similarly, for the post-meal values, these are 140 and above and 200 and above for pre-diabetes and diabetes. And because these levels have been understood to be toxic to the tissues. And that's how we define diabetes.
Sure. Just so I understand it correctly, post-meal, when we say 140 is a value, are we saying 12 hours after post-meal or right after meal is what we're looking at 140?
No, this is 2 hours. 2 hours after a meal.
2 hours.
Because the normal physiology is that blood glucose goes up after meal, but the body physiology has to bring it down back to normal by secretion of insulin. And this generally happens between 90 minutes to 2 hours. So at 2 hours, if your glucose levels are still high, higher than what is normal, then you seem to have either pre-diabetes or diabetes.
Sure. And right after meal, within the 2 hour window after meal, having values above 140 seems okay.
Yeah, immediately after, yes, because that's variable. Some people, and also depends on what you have eaten. But irrespective of what you've eaten, at 2 hours, these levels would come down to normal in a person whose pancreas is functioning.
Sure, normally. Sure. You talked about a word called insulin, and I wanted your help to explain this. What exactly is insulin, and what is insulin resistance? Why I'm asking these points is because they've been talked about in isolation, and I see we as lay people at times don't make great sense of it. And since we have the pleasure of having you, it will be of great value.
Yeah, insulin actually is spoken in the same breath as glucose. Insulin is a hormone which is secreted by pancreas. And our pancreas is the main gland which actually controls as far as the energy metabolism is concerned. It has two main parts, what we call as the exocrine and the endocrine. Exocrine part is what secretes enzymes. And these enzymes help us to digest foods. And one of them being the carbohydrate part of it, which is broken down to glucose by these enzymes. Similarly, there is an endocrine part of the same pancreas gland, which are called the alpha cells and beta cells. And these cells produce hormones. Beta cells produce hormones, which is called insulin, and alpha cell produces glucagon. Now, these two hormones are actually, they work in tandem. Insulin is the most important hormone as far as metabolism is concerned, because one, it's an anabolic hormone. When we say anabolic, means it sort of converts a simple form into a more complex form to be stored. So, for example, when we consume a carbohydrate and it's broken down to glucose by digestion, this glucose, when it enters the blood, insulin acts on it to ensure that this glucose is then subsequently either pushed into the cells to be utilized for energy, or whatever is surplus is stored as glycogen. And glycogen is the storage form of glucose in the body. And this mainly happens in the liver. But glycogen is also there stored in muscle to some extent. And in fact, as athletes, we love that glycogen because it helps us when we run. On the other hand, insulin also has a role in protein as well as fat metabolism. And there also it's an anabolic form. So when we eat fat and it's broken down into simpler form, which are called fatty acids, triglycerides, they are again stored as fat in the body. And this, again, insulin is what helps. And similarly, the protein synthesis and anabolism there also is dependent on insulin. When we say diabetes, basically it means that the glucose levels are not coming down purely because the insulin that we have is either not adequate, as in quantity, so we have deficiency of insulin, or we have what is called insulin resistance. Means, though we have insulin, but it's not able to work properly at the levels where it should work at the tissue level or at the cellular level. And this resistance, in response to this resistance, what our body does is that it produces more of insulin. The idea is to overcome this resistance, because this is not an absolute resistance. This is relative. So if I produce more insulin, I can overcome this. So when we have insulin resistance, our body produces more insulin, tends to overcome this resistance. It can happen for a few months, few years, depending on how much is the degree of resistance. And then our pancreatic cells sort of tire out, they get fatigued, and the levels of insulin start falling. And because insulin levels then cannot overcome this resistance, we develop what is called diabetes. So that's how you're born with some degree of resistance to insulin. Our body can keep producing excess insulin to overcome this. Maybe for years or decades, you can live like that normally. And at some point in time, your insulin is no longer enough and you land up with diabetes.
That's pretty detailed and makes a lot of sense. I was listening to another conversation as a layperson where I could make sense of it. It seems like the pancreas are almost like that. They're deploying these BMC dump trucks to clean out the trash from how you clean it from the trucks. Similarly, they are cleaning out from your bloodstream. And over a period of time, when you keep loading more and more, after a period of time, they are exhausted and they are not able to clear it anymore, or the efficiency reduces. And as a result, like our trash keeps piling up, similarly, the blood glucose level starts to pile up. Is that right analogy? Am I getting remotely correct?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what actually happened.
Got it. So now, why is it happening? Is it happening because of the nutritional intake? Is it happening because of sedentary lifestyle, etc.? This doesn't seem normal. It should be like, okay, we get up, we eat, we work out, and through the day it should be normal. Metabolic activities should be undertaken, and we should not go through this situation. What are some of the reasons of why it's happening?
Yeah, so like I said earlier, genetically we are predisposed to have resistance to insulin. And okay, that's because of the insulin act on the cells at some point. They're called receptors for this hormone. And these receptors by themselves develop this abnormality wherein the insulin is not able to work properly. Now, that's a background problem which is likely to remain because genetics is what we are born with. But thereafter, what's acquired is that the environment has added to it, is the adipose tissue or the fat. As a society or as a community, if you see, look, or in the larger perspective, as a race, we have a tendency to develop increased adiposity. And this adiposity predominantly is abdominal. You would find a person may look very lean, but there is always some amount of fat around the abdomen or inside the abdomen. And this fat is what's called visceral fat, is a very metabolically active fat. This fat produces hormones by themselves, which are inflammatory hormones. They are hormones which actually are counter to insulin, and they are not allowing the insulin to work properly. And one of the major reasons for increasing insulin resistance over a period of time on the background of an inherent genetic resistance is this increase in adiposity. And that comes with sedentary lifestyle. It comes with the fact that we are consuming calories which are far in excess of our requirement. And this adds on over a period of time, and then you develop more resistance. And then that's why this insulin, although you have excess of insulin, but then sort of you run out of it eventually.
Sure, sure. Just to stay here for a bit more, because it's such an important topic. Nutritionally, when we are consuming different nutrients, different food, etc., is there a difference if you are consuming complex carbohydrates versus simple carbohydrate? When you're consuming cola versus you consume bread, which is organic and with seeds, is there a difference? And does body respond to both of these differently?
Because if you see, when you eat something, it has to be broken down in the intestines and get absorbed. And this absorption leads to increased levels of blood glucose. Now, either you load the system with something which rapidly gets absorbed and which creates a spike of glucose in the blood. And to overcome the spike, you require a spike of insulin as well. But then insulin of the pancreas is not able to function that way. But more efficient way of consuming the same amount of calorie or glucose or carbohydrates would be to put it in a more complex form, because then it takes time to be broken down and it produces a gradual peak and a gradual fall. And the same amount of insulin is able to take care of that more efficiently than it would take care of a spike. So that's why in diabetics where the insulin levels are not adequate, a complex form of carbohydrate is likely to produce less hyperglycemia or high blood glucose levels than a simpler form. And the same applies to normal people as well, because a rapid spike of glucose leading to a rapid spike of insulin actually is counterproductive in long run, because you are fatiguing the beta cells and also you are producing hyperinsulinemia or high levels of insulin, which are eventually going to store the carbohydrate and, more importantly, the adipose or the fat storage that happens. So hyperinsulinemia actually leads to increased adiposity as well. So it's sort of a vicious cycle.
And you talked about adiposity and you talked about visceral fat, and I wanted your help in explaining a bit what's the difference between visceral fat and subcutaneous fat, and are both of these connected as a result of what nutritionally you are intaking and how you are living as a lifestyle? Are both of these connected?
There is a lot of genetic aspect to this. We all have some degree of subcutaneous fat, which is very important, and we all have some degree of visceral fat, which is very essential for good health. A lot of our hormones, which are life-saving, like what we call as steroids, cortisol, testosterone, aldosterone, these which come from adrenal glands, these hormones require fat as the, or cholesterol as the, they are the basic substrate from which they are produced. So if you don't have adequate levels of fat, it may actually be counterproductive. But then the same genetics also in our case has a limitation on amount of fat that can be stored as subcutaneous fat. So anything that is consumed in excess thereafter gets stored as a visceral fat, which has no limit. Visceral fat can get stored everywhere almost in the body. And like you have it in the abdomen, this is basically a fat around the intestines. But you also have fat which gets stored inside the liver, what we call as a fatty liver, which is now one of the commonest causes of chronic liver disease, leading to cirrhosis or liver failure. And also this same fat can get stored in various tissues, especially even in pancreas, the fat gets stored and does not allow beta cells to function properly. The same fat can get stored in the muscles, and does not allow the insulin to work at the level of the muscles. So fat getting stored in various tissues or glands is what is visceral fat. And it is something which works against our normal physiology and produces excess amount of inflammation, which does not happen in case of subcutaneous fat, which is less metabolically active.
Got it. Okay. And now coming back to the point of diabetes, we talked about how the situation is acquired. How do you reach a condition where you may be pre-diabetic or diabetic? Are there any onsets of figuring out that, okay, now you are in a situation that you may be prone to getting pre-diabetes or getting diabetic, other than, of course, the blood test that ideally people should be going through over a period of time? But are there any symptoms through which you will be able to identify, or these are pretty silent and almost no symptoms in the start?
So the common type of diabetes that we see, what we call as the type 2 diabetes, is what usually happens very silently. Most of the time, actually the glucose levels creep up very gradually. And when there is a change in metabolism happening very gradually, it does not produce symptoms to the same extent as something happening abruptly. And you would find that actually there is no symptom. Very rarely, in less than 20-30% of the total all diabetics would have some kind of symptoms. And there also, it would only happen once the glucose levels are already pretty high. And those symptoms are of weight loss, excessive urination, because high glucose levels sort of go through the kidney and take water along with it. So the individual would pass excess urine. Would be losing weight despite eating adequately, and repeatedly getting some kinds of infections, because the high glucose levels makes you prone to get infected. And this weight loss, excess urination, and excessive thirst, because you are losing so much of water all the time, is the classical symptom of diabetes, which is seen in very small minority of these patients. What is important is that there are risk factors for developing diabetes, and diabetes being a condition which is predominantly silent but can produce its complications even while it is silent, it is very important that you screen for it. And that's the reason why the various criteria for screening have started, even in patients who have no symptoms. And this screening would start right at the age of 30 or 35, and even earlier in patients who have, or individuals who have parents who have diabetes, or who have siblings who have diabetes, or individuals who have already developed hypertension, cholesterol, because these are metabolic problems and they come along with diabetes. And then, of course, in women who develop diabetes during pregnancy are prone to develop diabetes later in life, or if they have certain conditions like polycystic ovary syndrome, or individuals who are overweight or obese, they are again much more prone to develop these conditions. So these individuals would have to get themselves screened almost on an annual basis, because the earlier you catch diabetes and earlier you address it, less likely is it to produce its long-term complications.
Got it. Yeah, one way is that earlier you catch it, the better it is, or the longer you can continue to be fit, or the lesser the chances, of course, of possibly catching one of these situations. Of course, a genetic predisposition is not something that's in great control of us, and we can't do much about it. But on the exercise aspect of things and nutrition aspect of things, things can be controlled. So I wanted to now bring your attention to this topic, that is around exercise as a way of living, or as a protocol, not because you have diabetes or not. Do you think it is a strength training that one has to look at, or is it endurance sport, cardiovascular fitness one should be looking at when they think of diabetes or other metabolic diseases and keeping those at bay, for example?
Yeah, so this is a very important question, because logically speaking, people all, and it's generally been the perception that aerobic activity or endurance activities are what are form of exercise which people are supposed to be doing to lose weight or prevent diabetes. or if diabetes is there already to keep it under control. But if you actually see both forms of exercise, the endurance form or the aerobic form of exercise, along with strength training or what is called resistance exercise, both these have a very important role. And if you look at the international guidelines for diabetes, they propose that at least 150 minutes per week of aerobic activity. And along with that, at least 2 sessions of strength training are important for all patients who have either pre-diabetes, diabetes, or individuals who are at risk to develop these. And in fact, it's not a bad idea for all of us to perform them as a sort of a primordial prevention of these lifestyle disorders. And just to make it more complete the answer, although we understand that aerobic activity would bring down glucose levels because muscles require glucose. So while you are running or walking, it's being consumed. But strength training helps in the form that your muscles are a great source of improving insulin resistance or sort of sensitivity to insulin. So while you exercise those muscles with weights or even body weight exercises, while the muscular activity itself brings down the blood glucose levels, it also makes this muscle more efficient in picking up glucose from the blood later, after you've finished your exercise for a long time. And this continues to work for a long time. So this improves the insulin sensitivity. And of course, all these exercises have a positive benefit on the lipid levels, your cholesterol, condition your heart, because these are the organs which are eventually going to be affected by diabetes, and also bring down your blood pressure, which is a major sort of a killer along with glucose in patients with diabetes.
Right. Thank you for bringing the strength training aspect of it. The resistance training and the EPOC value post-exercise is something that's higher in through strength training or resistance training. And as a result, what you were explaining makes a lot of sense as well. Now, in case someone is pre-diabetic or diabetic already, do they need to think that, okay, it's a serious grave condition, it's a end of the world, or a remission is possible? And you did talk about some of the exercise protocols, etc. But how should they look at including that in their daily routine, that it's safe for them to exercise? Because when there is a glucose dip, I remember I was sitting with someone actually yesterday, and he's a dear friend, and after a point of time, he started to get very drowsy, and he quickly asked me to bring him some sugar. And if similar situation occurs when you are working out or running, may not be the safest way to be exercising. So what would you suggest? How should they be possibly creating their exercise routine in day of things that is happening?
Yeah, so firstly, the point that how important is it for exercise to exercise for people who have pre-diabetes or diabetes? I think it's like it's for normal people. I think it's more so for patients of pre-diabetes and diabetes. The fact that it improves your metabolism in every way, including the glucose metabolism, which is primarily affected in diabetes. It helps you control your glucose levels much better with the same amount of drugs. And in fact, the levels of the drug requirement goes down if you have a regular exercise activity that's going on. Now, exercise does bring down glucose levels. It also at times can cause spikes of glucose. That depends on what kind of activity you're doing. But generally, glucose levels would tend to fall. So there are a few aspects of safety when we advise exercise to patients of these conditions. Firstly, the fact that you're diabetic puts you at a greater risk to have heart problems. And that's why before getting into an exercise activity, if you've not been doing it regularly, one would always have to go through a cardiac evaluation and see if there's any issue and can you be put through that kind of exercise. And the best way to do that is to undergo a treadmill test, which is basically a stress test for the heart, just to ensure what level of exercise is safe for the heart. So that's something that one needs to undergo echocardiography and treadmill test to see whether your heart is safe as far as exercise is concerned. Now, after having done that, once you're exercising and you're likely to have glucose levels dropping, you need to see whether your glucose levels at the start of exercise are fine or not. Two, which kind of drugs are you on for diabetes? Because there are a large number of drugs which actually do not cause low glucose levels, or what we call as hypoglycemia. But there are a few drugs which are used in diabetes which can cause low glucose levels, like insulin for that matter, or certain form of tablets like what we call them as sulfonylurea. Now, these are two major groups of drugs which can cause hypoglycemia in a patient who's maybe well controlled on them, but when he starts exercising, he may go into low glucose. So in such settings, it's always good to consult your doctor and get the dosage of these drugs adjusted. And that would require glucose values to be measured prior to exercise. If the exercise is long enough, say an hour or more, sometime during the exercise as well. And of course, post-exercise, because we spoke about the effect of exercise lasting for hours after you finish doing that, to see whether the glucose levels are dropping. And adjusting the dose of drugs, these drugs would help in preventing hypoglycemia. And if your glucose levels are low to start with, you need to consume some form of carbohydrate before you start exercising. And also ensure that you have a sustained intake of carbohydrate while you are exercising. Especially that's important for endurance sports, where you're going to run beyond 90 minutes, 2 hours. You would need some kind of fueling and to maintain that levels of glucose. So it's definitely important. But having said that, I must say that there are a lot of people living with diabetes who are exercising in the most severe form of endurance and doing well, basically because they are looking after all these aspects.
Right. Being aware and taking actions as a result of it, I think are important. Would you then suggest that CGM application can be one of an effective way of identifying your sugar level on a regular basis?
Yeah, in fact, now we do have CGM systems which are fairly easy to use. And in fact, now we have CGM devices which are meant for patient to use it on themselves. They don't even need a doctor for that. So it's a very simple kind of a patch to be put on your arm, and you can sort of with a non-touch device, you can actually read the glucose levels. The in patients with diabetes, it definitely has a great role to play, because it tells you real time what are the glucose levels. Although there is some amount of lag between your blood glucose levels and the glucose levels given by these sensors, because they are actually measuring the glucose levels in your tissue fluid under your skin and not exactly the blood glucose. So there is some kind of a lag, but then it gives you a fair amount of idea about how your glucose is behaving. So it also helps you fuel depending on how your glucose levels are changing while you're exercising. In fact, one of such devices is promoted by Kipchoge himself, and he uses it, although he's not a diabetic. But then, so we don't promote it in non-diabetics as a routine, but in diabetes patients, we routinely use it even if they are not into athletics or other sports, purely to control their glucose better. But lately, I'm seeing a lot of runners who are using these devices who are not diabetics, but then they are using it because performance requires an optimum levels of glucose. And if you have these devices and you are kind of seeing how your glucose is behaving, probably you can adjust your fueling methods. And if you can actually analyze this data well, then it makes a lot of sense to adjust your fueling accordingly and improve your performance.
Actually, that brings me to the next question, because I just got off the CGM I had for 2 weeks, 2-3 days ago, and a lot of data I could not make sense of. At times I would see the data is not coming, there'll be blank and it will not show me anything. And then sometimes at night, rather early morning, I'll find a glucose spike. I would try to make sense of it. the content will come from the company, the content will come much later. And I'll try to relate both of these. By then, my interest has gone to something else. And by the end of 2 weeks, I was more stressed than when I started, to be honest. And I was not sure what do I do with the numbers that I got. So thank you for bringing this topic. And I wanted to understand, if someone is applying CGM for performance purposes, how do they look at making sense of the numbers that are coming their way?
Yeah, so actually numbers can be quite disheartening at times, and it's not always reliable. We must understand that these devices have their limitations, especially when you apply it to your arm and if you are sleeping to one side, on that side, in fact, and there's pressure on that sensor, it can actually sort of press the skin there and not allow any reading to happen, or at times give a falsely low reading. So we normally do not go by those values, and that's why we normally don't use them on non-diabetics. But when it comes to performance assessment and sort of enhancement using these devices, although personally I've never used them, but logically speaking, if I have to use them, for example, if I go on a long run and I have certain way of fueling myself by taking gels at a particular time or taking the electrolyte fluids which have some degree of glucose at a particular time during my run, and if I am also on a CGM, I can actually see how this fueling has helped, because one size doesn't fit everyone. So you may find that maybe I would require more frequent use or less frequent use, because excessive use of glucose also is not good while you are running. We sometimes tend to overdo these gels. So if you actually see to individualize the fueling and maintaining the glucose levels between 100 to 150, 160, that's the optimum level of glucose which you want while you're performing, will help if you have this kind of CGM. So that's how I look at it as a way to help a runner. But to wear it all through and then go through the readings of what happened at night or what happened early morning may be sort of unsettling. So one should not read too much into it.
Right. Makes sense. Now, last point on glucose spike in the bloodstream. We talked about that it primarily is led by what you intake and what form of sugar it is, etc. Do you think also there is a stress response, and as a result of that, there can be glucose spike? And if yes, how does that take place?
Yeah, in fact, it has a major role. In fact, if you see, the glucose levels are dependent to some extent on what you eat, but people would come back to you saying that I am having the same kind of breakfast, same lunch every day, but someday my sugars are high, someday they're less. There is a component of stress, and stress works on glucose by the hormones that I earlier talked about, the steroids. So whenever there is stress, it directly reflects on the body to produce a stress response. And this response to stress, as far as body is concerned, is to produce hormones which are called the adrenal steroids. And adrenal catecholamines. They are like what we call adrenaline and noradrenaline. These two hormones come from the adrenal medulla and adrenal cortex, which produces steroids, which are called glucocorticoids. Now, these hormones basically are body's response to stress. And in animals, they were called as fight or flight response. Means when an animal is sort of it's encountering a person whom it's scared of, it will either fight or it would run away. And for both of these activities, it would require energy. And this energy would require a rapid breakdown of stored substances like glycogen or fat. And this breakdown happens by catabolic hormones, which are actually opposite of insulin. And these hormones are all catabolic, and they break down these stored substances and produce high amount of glucose so that it can be used rapidly and utilized to produce energy. But in stress, we don't need to either fight or flight, but then this stress that we are every day undergoing, and in fact a lot of times it's purely a lack of a good quality sleep, and you would wake up in the morning and you will find your sugar levels are high, or your blood pressure levels are high now, or your resting heart rate is high. All these are in response to these stress hormones, and these also contribute to your blood glucose levels and cause hyperglycemia.
Got it. I think we understood significantly about almost everything about diabetes from a layman's perspective and how one can look at managing it, remitting it, as well as being aware to make sure that they adapt to a healthier and fitter lifestyle so as to keep these situations at bay for as long as possible. We also talked about the role of CGMs for performance and how glucose can be used as an energy source and should be used as an energy source for performance, and you can optimally fuel yourself if you are aware of the numbers, etc. I think significant value to all our listeners. And I think it's also time for us to close the conversation. But before we go, I wanted to see if... did I miss anything? I know there is a lot more, but of course, from a layman's perspective, did you think that we covered a fair ground in this conversation today?
Yeah, of course. Talk about diabetes or running, both actually we can go on and on. And especially being runners, there's no end to the chat we can have. But I think these aspects are important. There are a lot of other things that one can cover. What is unsettling, in fact, which is an issue which I've talked about earlier in certain other forums, also is about safety of runners, especially cardiac safety. These are issues which are directly related to metabolism. Your metabolic health reflects onto your heart. And finally, it's not the glucose or the blood pressure which kills you. What kills you is the heart itself. So managing these aspects along with stress-free, good sleep, a life which is balanced, along with a metabolic profile which is healthy, would lead to a cardiac health which is sort of optimum to live longer, and also to be an efficient runner, not just being a fast runner, being an efficient runner and also being a runner for a long period of time. Because that's, I think, more important than to perform very well for a few years and then just fade away. I think if we continue to run for years together safely, whether it's slow, fast, doesn't matter. And the fact that we motivate others along, and the only people who get motivated are when they look at somebody who's been doing it for a long period of time. And every time there's some death or some such mishap that happens, it's always very unsettling for everyone around us. And it demotivates people. So I'm glad you actually brought in this kind of a podcast to publicize this issue. It's very important. One aspect, if I can just have a minute to cover, I would like to say is about what we is a new concept, fairly recent concept called normal weight obesity. We understand obesity as somebody who has excess weight or who has a BMI which is beyond a normal range. But we must remember that a lot of us have a lot of fat inside, and we may be having a normal BMI. And we are equally at risk to develop all these problems which are related to high BMI. So the worst in this case is that somebody who's obese is actually more careful, who's taking precautions or trying to lose weight. People who have normal weight feel that they're okay. They may not even exercise. So this aspect, as Asians, as Indians, we are at greater risk. We must remember that we must exercise irrespective of whether we have excess weight or not. Weight loss is just a byproduct. Regular exercise remains, even if you do not have diabetes, it helps. And of course, we spoke about remission of diabetes. I think that's something, it's very, something recent, but it's now, it's definitely there. It's happening. People are able to get out of this diabetes and remain so for years, and that helps because it reduces the risk of complications over long term. That's all I wanted to say.
Awesome. No, thank you. And I think this one is very important. We have often heard among our community of members that there will be someone who will say, hey, I can eat anything I want. I don't gain weight. And so why do I need to run or exercise? You guys can keep doing it. I don't need to. But you are so right that this must be considered, that just because it is not seen visibly doesn't mean it's not there. And when something can't be seen, the risk of that is a lot riskier than actually what you can see, isn't it?
Yeah, it's worse.
Yeah, it is. Thank you so much for the conversation today. And I think from this conversation, as well as what we were discussing right in the start, I would possibly need to request to get maybe a half day or one day of yours to cover several topics, because there are so many topics that I want to just keep going on and on from a runner's perspective, also from general health perspective, because we are runners later, but all of us are normal humans, individuals who live our daily lives. We are not professional athletes, most of us. And all of these situations come our way, and more often than not, we are not aware of how to address these, because we just, academically, we have not read or studied, because most of us didn't study this. And also, there is so much of misinformation that exists online that anything that you have in your mind, whether it's bias or fact, will be verified as soon as you start to type that online. So I would possibly request for a few more conversations in the coming months, and maybe one conversation just to talk about your running journey. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. This was a great pleasure to have you.
Same here. The pleasure was mine as well. And I must thank you and appreciate you for the good work that you're doing for the running community.
That was all for today. I hope you understood a lot about diabetes and a few points got demystified too. I learned a great deal, and in fact, I might need to listen to it a couple of times to make absolute sense of everything that was discussed. Keep listening, and I will speak with you guys in exactly 1 week from now. And by the way, you have stopped reviewing us, isn't it? On our podcast channels, please go and give us a rating. And it will be even more lovely if you wrote about how we are doing. If there is anything you would like for us to cover, please let us know of that as well. And speak to you next week.